I'm Mike Giari, Executive Director of the Port of Redwood City, and I'm President of the Bay Planning Coalition. And if you'll come in and sit down, we have a special treat for you this morning. We're going to show a quick little film that's about saving the bay, that's going to be featured on KQED public television. And I want to introduce the director, producer, creator of the film, Ron Blattman, who will introduce it. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you to Mike, and thanks to Ellen. Just what you're going to see very briefly is the opening 4.5 minutes to what is a 4-hour series that some of you have heard about called Saving the Bay. It's all about the history of San Francisco Bay from its geological formation until today. So we're just going to show you the first 4.5 minutes. This has been in the works for quite a while. It's going to air in October. We started our final sound mix yesterday, and about 6-8 weeks from now, we should have pretty much everything done. So I hope you enjoy it, and I'll be around during today if people have any questions or anything else to ask about it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, oh, yeah, there you go. Yeah, sit down. Important thing that I'll do all day is to thank our 47 sponsors who made the conference today possible. Without the 47 sponsors, financial sponsors that we've had for our conference, it wouldn't be possible to have it. We're very grateful to our hosting in-kind sponsor, LFR. LFR is an environmental and engineering consulting firm established over 25 years ago by Jim Levine, and Jim is also one of the founders of the Bay Planning Coalition. We are grateful for LFR's past support of Bay Planning and their continued support as they now join with Arcadis US. I'm very excited about the Sustainability Cafe, LFR's contribution to this year's conference. Phil Abednick, an LFR board member, together with Mark Pardini, LFR's art director, put this wonderful exhibit together. Phil will talk more about it in a few minutes, and it'll be part of our conference all day. And I also want to acknowledge 7 contributing supporters of the conference today: Cargill Salt, Chevron, the Port of San Francisco, the law firm of Ferrelli, Braun, and Martell, Valero Refining Company, the Dutra Group, and Manson Construction Company. They, along with 39 supporting and donor sponsors, contributed to the conference today. Their names are on the screens here, and I think we should give all of our sponsors a big round of applause for supporting the conference today. The title of our conference today is Sustainable Strategies for a Changing Bay. The word change is something that we hear a lot. We've heard a lot recently. Some people, I think, maybe are even getting tired of it or don't really think about it when they hear that word. But a much more powerful and, I think, better word that I've been hearing more frequently in the last few weeks is the word transformation. The dictionary defines transformation as a great change. So there's that word change again. But I want to give you a little analogy here that maybe will help you understand better why I think transformation is a more meaningful and a more powerful word. If you have an egg, and you take the egg and you put it in a pot of boiling water, or you break the egg and put it in a fry pan, you're going to change the raw egg into a cooked egg. Now, if you take an egg and you put it in an incubator, you're going to then wait a few days, and the egg will change from an egg into a chick. That change is a transformation. And if you think about it, going from a raw egg to a cooked egg and going from an egg into a chicken are two different things, and the transformation into a chicken is much more powerful, much more complicated, and has much bigger impacts than the change into a cooked egg. So that's what we're going to be talking about today, is sustainability at a time when things are transforming around the bay. With that in mind, we have three sessions at our conference today. They're all structured to examine some of the components of putting together a sustainable future. That's going to impact the economy, our way of living, and also the environment of the Bay and the entire Bay region. The first panel will feature federal, state, and local speakers who are working on the implementation of the new federal economic stimulus program. I think everyone is very excited about the federal stimulus program, but I think we're also all challenged by the ongoing permitting process that's going to be involved with all or most of those projects, as well as recently adopted and emerging environmental regulations for air quality and greenhouse gases that will definitely influence the progress and the success of the federal economic stimulus program. Our second panel is going to look at some of those environmental permitting and other factors. Then we will break for lunch. And for our luncheon program, we are very pleased to have as our special guest speaker, John Hummer. John Hummer was formerly Deputy Secretary for Goods Movement in the California Business, Transportation, and Housing Agency. And John just recently has been appointed the director of MARAD's new Northern California Gateway office in San Francisco. And we will introduce John and his topic at lunch. Immediately following lunch, we're going to plunge right into a very stimulating and important afternoon session on the future of the Bay's waterfront. The third session will encourage dialogue and information exchange on various interests that are both aligning and sometimes colliding over land use on the waterfront. The discussion will help shape the Bay Planning Coalition's Waterfront Planning Leadership Initiative, which is a very important part of Bay Planning's strategic plan. Immediately following the last panel session, we will have a reception in the Sustainability Cafe. At that time, we would like all of you to gather in the cafe and continue the vital conversations that we've had today. So I'll now turn over the program to Phil Lebednick, who will tell you more about what's going to happen and what awaits you at the Sustainability Cafe. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike. Good morning, everyone. I'm Phil Lebednick. I'm Secretary-Treasurer of the Bay Planning Coalition this year, and I'm happy to see so many of you here at our conference. It's going to be very exciting. Also want to welcome you on behalf of LFR and Arcadis. We're very pleased to be the host sponsor this year for the conference. And it's an interesting coincidence today that it's Earth Day, and we were very careful to schedule our conference on this particular day, and I think the subject matter that Mike just talked about is fits right in to Earth Day, and then again, I guess just by serendipity, if you will, we have our sustainability cafe that Mike has mentioned a couple of times. So on Earth Day, we should be reflecting on the connectivity and the interdependency among the natural resources and the human resources in the world. And I hope that Ron's trailer of his Saving the Bay production kind of set your mind in that direction. We're challenged to keep the ecosystem balanced. Balanced with our human activities, and I think we're constantly aware of that. I'm happy to report that, based on all of my observations, humankind has progressed. It's better than the alternative. We've evolved into a species whose activities influence, at least many of us think, the very machinery of our planetary environment. But along with that progress, and along with the power that comes from that progress, also comes an obligation. And that obligation is to be ever more cognizant of and responsible for our actions. Bay Planning Coalition's mission is to ensure that commerce, recreation, and the environment thrive in San Francisco Bay. And so we're perfectly aligned with this vision. But I think even more importantly than that mission, those words, is the way that Bay Planning Coalition functions. And there's a lesson to be learned here. We bring together, as you can see looking around the room here, a broad spectrum of interests. And it's one of the key things about this conference that makes it so remarkable. We can and we will work together to forge a mutual vision of the future. Even though the Bay Area is just a small microcosm of the planet Earth, we also know from our experience and our forebears here that this little microcosm can be an incubator and can be a leader and a visionary leader for the future beyond our little microcosm. Sustainability, we've heard that word now a few times in the conference today, and it's a somewhat shopworn term. What does this mean? Is it just a buzzword, or is there some substance behind this concept? In today's marketplaces, what does a sustainable economy mean? Have our activities led to rapidly accelerating change in climate? Can we live in a way that our use of resources is in some kind of balance with their natural renewal? Are we at risk of losing those natural resources upon which we place so much value? All these questions and many more are being asked today speak to the dawn of a new responsibility. Our sustainability cafe, here's a partial picture of it on the screen, we've put together in the foyer, and the idea behind this is to just suggest to you some thoughts along these lines. There's some information on there. It's highly graphic, We hope you find it interesting and exciting, and we hope most of all that it encourages you to talk with each other and network among yourselves. Let's see if I can work this. So we've got a couple of iconographic elements that I just want to explain very briefly, and I'll be done in a minute or so. We have some of these red graphics that speak to what kinds of impacts may be associated with some of the activities that you see displayed in the cafe. These would be, for example, natural resources, such as represented by the tree, the birds, the fish. Recreational resources, both pedestrian by the individual who is fishing, as well as boating, the yacht in the lower left side. Impacts directly on families and living conditions. Impacts on industry, as upland industry, as well as maritime industry, as represented by the ship. Then we have these icons that are, and these icons are spread throughout the graphics. What kind of sustainability are we talking about? And I alluded to that a couple of minutes ago. We have different aspects of sustainability: the economy, society, quality of life, sustainability, what we call developmental, which is a sort of urban planning or management of larger scale things than just individual families, and then finally biological or natural resource category. So you'll see these icons spread across the cafe and the various graphics, and it'll be interesting to see whether you agree with our cut on that or have some other ideas. Can we sustain our economy? Can we sustain our quality of life? Can we sustain and enhance our natural environment? There's, I think, one word that actually is the answer to all these questions, and that word is leadership. You have come here to this conference because you are all leaders, and you're leaders in the Bay Area, but as I mentioned earlier, certainly you can become a leader for a much greater vision than just that of the Bay Area. By striving for to arrive here at this conference and in the future for a shared vision, and then by working together to advance that vision, you will be the leaders who provide a sustainable future for our children and grandchildren. So with that, I hope you enjoy the conference, and I'd like to introduce our Executive Director of the Bay Planning Coalition, Ellen Junk.
Welcome. Just a few housekeeping items before we get right into and plunge into our first panel, the Stimulus Roadmap for the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act. Restrooms off to my left and phones are located just outside the ballroom, excuse me. Cell phones, please carry on conversations on the outside foyer, and of course turn them off while you're inside here. As you have requested, we have scheduled breaks. We have one major break right after the stimulus roadmap panel. And of course, we've got a tight day. What we've tried to do today, too, is keep this conference very compact and shortened. So we're not extending it too far into the afternoon. So if you have to get back to the office or you want to beat the traffic, we've scheduled to actually conclude at 3 o'clock this afternoon. However, what we are offering to you is for any of you that want to have small group meetings, for those people you see here who you don't have trouble getting in touch with and connecting with, we're saying stay here, meet in the cafe, and have a Coke or a glass of wine. We will have those comestibles available for you. So we want you to think about that. And also, we want you to stay for the afternoon session. I know many of you come to these and say, I'll just go to lunch and then get back to the office. We really encourage you to stay for the afternoon session. Questions and answers will be submitted on cards. Each of you have a couple cards on your seat, and there'll be folks, our volunteer staff, circulating throughout the room, holding up a card. Please, this conference is to have a dialogue and encourage a lot of interaction. So submit your cards to the speakers. Will be collecting them, and they'll bring them up to the moderators. Please consult your program for the biographies of our exceptional faculty. There will be no formal introductions of the panelists during the day. We discovered that takes a little bit too long. So please consult the biographies in your program book. So I'm looking forward to this day and greeting many of you. I'm now going to proceed with introducing briefly our panelists for panel one, and Randy Rentschler, come on up, Jim Hearn, and Comey. It's great. This panel, the Stimulus Roadmap for the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, we have three very good speakers to cover really what's coming down, as I like to say, on the stimulus program. We are very excited about the program because when we talk about sustainability, well, we're talking about finances, we're talking about dollars. And that's why we're starting the day looking at the wonderful opportunities we have with the program. On February 17th, 2009, President Obama signed the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, a $787 billion plan to, and I'm going to just read you a few of the goals that are right in the preamble to H.R. 1. Preserve and create jobs and promote economic recovery. To assist those most impacted by the recession. To provide investments needed to increase economic efficiency by spurring technological advances in science and health. To invest in transportation, environmental protection, and other infrastructure that will provide long-term economic benefits. And to stabilize state and local budgets. Now I'm hoping to advance the slides here. And this is a new remote. I thought this was going to do it, but it didn't. Let's see. Let's try that. There we go. Okay. You can get a lot of information on HR1. I have to say, there are websites and there are websites. And what I have done here, of course, the major website is the federal government's website for H.R. 1, which is recovery.gov. California has a website because every state is implementing H.R. 1 and has a very, I would say, very sophisticated and up to date. I'm very impressed with particularly what the state of California has done, and that's their website. In addition, we have some local programs which we'll hear about both from the Metropolitan Transportation Commission as well as another organization and a member of Bay Planning Coalition, the Bay Area Council and the Bay Area Economic Institute have a program to coordinate projects for submittal back up to the State Business Transportation and Housing Agency. And I'll speak a little bit about that later in the program. Here again, there's another website for the California Business Transportation and Housing Agency. And some of our speakers will also feature their websites, for instance, from Caltrans and the Federal Highway Administration. So what we're going to do today is, first of all, run through federal, state, local, how the government is organized for delivery of the program. And we just have three speakers, because what we want to do is encourage you to ask questions. If your project is not on a list somewhere, or you do not think you're going to get funding from this program or from any other program, now is the time to ask those questions, and perhaps we can give you some more information on how to get on the list. We also want to encourage you to ask questions about how you see the program operating. What's your perspective on it? So we really want to entertain some discussion on that. My first panelist, who will present the perspective of the Army Corps of Engineers, and the Army Corps of Engineers has received $4.6 billion for stimulus. And we're going to hear from Jim Hearn, who's Director of Programs from the South Pacific Division, first. And here's the remote, and there's the advance.
So save questions till the end?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ellen, Phil, Mike, thank you very much for inviting me here today. And on behalf of our commander, Colonel Janice Dombey, South Pacific Division, I want to welcome you all and thank you very much for allowing me to present the Corps of Engineers position as one of the many federal agencies that is involved in a stimulus package. Before I start, for those of you that knew our former commander, Brigadier General John McMahon, I want to tell you that he's doing well in Afghanistan. Very primitive conditions over there. Again, Afghanistan was very much neglected in the war on terrorism, and so his conditions over there, he said, are not fun. But he is enjoying himself working with General McKiernan over there to try to build up the infrastructure for the troop surge that's going on there, and he does say hi to everybody back here that he knew from the South Pacific Division. So on behalf of John, he wants to say hi to everybody. I also appreciate Phil's remarks very much in the beginning and the emphasis on sustainability of the Bay. The Corps is getting much involved, albeit very slowly, in sustainability. If you've ever seen the old movies on Los Angeles and the Los Angeles River, you see this big concrete culvert that protects Los Angeles and the cities around it. It is about as ugly as you can get. What they're doing in Los Angeles right now is a long-term $50 billion project to take down as much of that concrete as they can and restore the wetlands that are out there for the natural protection that the river has. And that's one area we're looking at right now. We are also looking at in all our construction that we do in our military customers right now, we're looking at LEED Silver certification, which means sustainable in as many areas, as many factors as we can in the LEED process. So the Corps is looking at sustainability. In fact, in our division, we have set up a sustainable engineering center in Los Angeles, where we're concentrating our expertise in sustainable engineering, both in our vertical and horizontal construction projects. Okay, the Corps is actually involved in three different funding situations right now. We are on the FY09 allocation that allotments have not yet been received. And what does that mean to you? It means right now we are still working on a continuing resolution. And when you work under a continuing resolution, you work on the projects of last year. So any new projects or any new phases of projects have not yet been instituted. So until we get our actual allotment from the Office of Management and Budget, we really can't start any new projects yet for FY09. So we haven't done any of those things yet. So that's one thing we're facing right now, waiting for those allotments to come down so we can distribute and put them on the projects that we wanted to do this year, not the ones that we're extending from last year. As far as the ARRA goes, we still don't know. We went back in our file, my colleague Ron Mueller, who's our Chief of Civil Works, the last time we said we expected, or the first time we said we expect the projects any day now was the 26th of February. And here it is, the middle of April, and we still don't know. They keep on going back and forth with OMB, asking for information, looking for this, change that, add this. So it's been a very moving target for us. I will say again, we expect it any day right now to get the project list. We are also preparing the FY10 budget. And the way that works for us is we will get probably sometime the end of this month, the first week in May, what they call the passback from OMB, and Office of Management and Budget when I say that. And what that is their first cut on projects for to be funded for the FY10. What we do then, we have 24 to 48 hours to respond to the first cut, the passback, with no, we want these changes to that budget. Then that goes in, and then probably sometime around mid-May, we will get the president's budget that you're all familiar with. And so once we get that, that then kind of starts the process for what we will be doing to defend for FY10. Then as that progresses, obviously the congressional delegations get involved and they try to have the congressional ads onto that. So that's where we are as far as our funding situation goes right now. As Ellen said, the Corps got $4.6 billion for the recovery process. What were the criteria for identifying projects that would go into the stimulus? And this was something that was very, it was mandated by the administration and the Office of Management and Budget. It had to be the earliest contract award for O&M. So if you had a contract award that was 6 months out, didn't stand a chance. The earlier the better. If you said I could execute this contract on day one, it was almost guaranteed to be funded. For construction is what a phase or a project completion. So if you can say we can finish phase five of this in 1 year, that would have done well in construction. Again, something that would have been 5 years out wouldn't have even been submitted. As Ellen said also, put people to work quickly. Again, that's why early contract award. If it's sitting in contracting, we're not putting anybody to work except our people. So again, early contract award gets people to work faster. Little chance of slippage. We don't want any other risk factors out there that could stop the project, where we then would have to stop that and move the money somewhere else. No environmental or other issues, real estate. And you know, in California, environmental issues are very thorny questions. If you have to complete an EIS or an EIR, it could take a year to 18 months to finish that project. So we needed projects that already had gone through that process or didn't require that process. The economic benefits. This is something that was added later on. Initially, it was just get projects in here. Then one of the first data calls that came back from OMB was, we want your cost-benefit ratio on these projects. And again, a cost-benefit ratio of at least one was a subtle criteria, though I've seen some of the estimates where they have gone below the benefit of one. And in some cases, if it's a cost share, the sponsor must have had the cost share also. And we know in California right now, many of our municipalities do not have the funds right now to come up with their part of the cost share. We are seeing many more right now what they call Section 103 requests for extension of their part of the cost share for 1 year. So again, they're hoping to get better in time so they can pay back their cost share in about a year. So those are the criteria that we were given for the projects that we could submit. How are the funds going to be allocated? One of the intents was to balance the funding across the nation so that no one area would get a preponderance of the projects. So I'm sure that's one thing they're looking at right now to make sure each section of the country gets a fair share of the projects. Again, projects with the earliest start dates will get funded first. Again, the whole idea of getting people to work faster. And projects that don't execute will have funds relocated to the next ready project. This was a bit problematic for us. In the language of the stimulus bill, of the HR 1, there were very flexible rules in there about how we can move money between projects. And those of you that have been involved with us before, that can be laborious if you don't have some kind of language in your bill that says you can move money quickly. So we made sure we put in a stimulus bill that we could reallocate funds quickly, again, to make sure that money is usable. One of the problems was, though, when they passed the president's budget for FY09, there was language in there that offset our flexibilities that we had in the stimulus bill. It was unintentional on Congress's part, but it was in there. So we are working on strategies. What our headquarters is doing is, if we get $1 million for a project, they may give us $50,000. Until we actually have the contract ready to go, then they'll give us the full amount. Because if it falls through, we can't move it as quickly as we thought. So we're trying these different strategies to deal with our ability to reprogram funds. But those were how OMB and our headquarters is looking at allocating the projects and the funds that are out there for the stimulus. How will the funds be spent? Those of you, again, that have dealt with us before, IFB invitation for bid or RFPs, where we have a set solicitation for that particular project. That'll be one of our methods. In fact, this is actually being encouraged by OMB to bring new contractors on board. We also have the IDEQs, indefinite delivery, indefinite quantities, the MATOCs, the POCAs, which are multiple award contracts where we pre-qualify contractors for it. A lot of our districts right now are working on, again, MATOCs, multiple award task orders, to meet our needs right now. We're making regional contracts. So we may land a contract in Los Angeles for a MATOC of $50 million, but our San Francisco district can use the capacity in that contract. So we're trying to work regionally and actually beyond our region to our Southwest partners in Dallas, Texas, and our Northwest partners in Portland to share their contract capacity. So again, because a lot of money is going to be on the table pretty soon, and we got to have contract capacity in order to do something with that. We also have our 8A set-asides and small business. They are an integral part of our program. In many cases, when we have smaller projects or operation and maintenance type repair projects, we very much rely on our small business partners under one of our IDIQs or POCAs out there so we can grab them quickly and get them to work on that. Again, so if you are a small business contractor, this is a great time for you. Make sure you're taking advantage of those programs that are out there. Another way of getting the stimulus money out fast is just increase existing contracts that are out there. Again, that was one way of surely of getting people on a job faster is by increasing something that already exists where you don't have to go through the solicitation process. There will be some internal hiring, both permanent and temporary. Again, while the stimulus is going on, the Corps still has its regular program going on. We also have a lot of people that are very close to retirement age. We're seeing a lot of attrition right now. And so the Corps is actively hiring right now staff. We have requested permission from Office of Personnel Management for direct hire authority. That allows us to bypass some of the cumbersome personnel rules that we have in getting people on board. It would allow us to do, for the stimulus period, direct hire, where we could go after some of the mid-level people that are being laid off by either the state or some private entities out there. We can bring them on board as mid-level people rather than starting with the intern and waiting years to get them to their full potential. Where do you look? What contracts are out there? What solicitations being out there? You're all familiar with fezbizops.gov. That's the site where everything has to be posted. We have other areas that we also work in. We have military programs and IIS, which is interagency international support programs. And this is an area which also will affect you out there. Under military construction, USAID's got about $1.5 billion. We'll see about $100 million of it. A lot of that is in what we call our O&M type work, which is operation and maintenance, repair facilities, normally anything from $10,000 to maybe $2 million. We figure we'll get between $100 million on military construction, $150 million on the O&M. The interagency international support is a real unknown to us right now. We are estimating right now we have a known amount of about $160 million. It could go as high as $1 billion because we are the construction agent for many of other federal agencies out there. We already know Bureau of Indian Affairs. Veteran Affairs have come to us and said, we want you to be our construction agent for the money that we're getting. Environmental Protection Agency, we work with them very closely. Department of Homeland Security has already come to us with a number of projects. ICE, again, part of DHS, Customs and Border Protection. Also, EPA has gotten a lot of money that are grants to the states. What's happening is the states are saying, this isn't our area of expertise. Corps, what can you do? So we haven't seen a lot of these things yet, partners that we don't always deal with, like GSA. GSA normally does their own construction work and their own project management. GSA is getting an enormous amount of money right now, which we're hearing from them is we don't know how we can spend it all. Again, so they might be looking towards the Corps. So as I said, we have a known amount of about $160 million with the potential of maybe $1 billion in additional work from interagency partners. So that's what's going on in our area right now. A big thing going on with this is reporting. The transparency, absolute transparency is required on this. For example, I did a presentation down in San Diego a couple of weeks ago, and because there were professional lobbyists there, I had to write up my entire briefing and post it on the website so anybody could see what I briefed and what questions I was asked at that conference. So the transparency that the administration is looking for right now is the most I have ever seen ever in my life, which is putting a lot of burden on the organizations that are doing this kind of work to capture all that and make sure it gets posted on the sites, www.recovery.gov. Anything that happens in this stimulus will be posted there. Every contract let, every job created, every suspected job created will be posted on that site. There's a weekly data call from all the agencies as to what happened the week before. And there'll be measures of progress against the jobs created, project phase completions, again, all reported on recovery.gov. And as Ellen said, this is an incredible investment in America. It'll be done through federal, through state, through local entities. Again, we are all part and partners of this whole thing. And the goal of getting people getting back to work again, stimulating the economy, but providing economic value, which is where you all come in out there. The economy of this country hinges on our harbors, and working on our harbors for the development of the resources on the land, the ecosystems, but also the navigation, the trade that is incredibly important to our country. And so we are in the middle of all this right now. Again, I wish I could tell you more of the projects. And as we said back in February, any day now we'll know. From what we've submitted, we should do well. We have a lot of money in the system right now. I would say we will know very soon what the projects will be. Ellen said we'll hold questions till the end, and you can write them down. Again, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it, my opportunity to be here and talk to you all.
Great. Jim, thank you. Yes, as I say, we're really excited. When you think $4.6 billion for the Army Corps, that's double their budget. That's what their normal budget is. And we have this opportunity here. All this money has to be obligated by end of September 2010. So let's hope we get this list soon. I'm really excited to have Kome Agyis here with us today. He's Interim Deputy Director for Planning and Modal Programs at Caltrans. And Kome was in Boston yesterday, and his flight was canceled. But he made it, so we're really excited that everything worked well. And Kome, come on up and tell us how California is implementing ARRA. There you go. That will advance.
Advance. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Ellen. Good morning. Let me start by giving a disclaimer that if anything is wrong with the slides, because I came on the red eye last night. That was the point of that mention earlier on. But truly, it's a privilege to be here with you, and on behalf of the department and Director Kempton, we appreciate the opportunity to join you this morning and to talk about ARRA and climate change and goods movement. I think you'll probably get more out of the climate change discussion later on, and most likely, and very likely, you'll get more out of the goods movement discussion when Mr. Hummer talks to you this afternoon. John has been in the middle of all of that, and I think you'll enjoy what he has to say, at least from his wealth of experience. With regards to the stimulus program, and I'm going to go back and forth between calling it stimulus and ARRA, I'll never say the full name. We had been working on this actually from the point we had heard that there might be a potential for a stimulus package. So back in the fall, going into December, right after the elections, we knew that we had to be talking about what we could potentially do. And it's really not that it's very intuitive. We have more work than we have money. And so this was a unique opportunity, not knowing exactly how much was going to come to the state. We were trying to get ready to be sure that we're organized to use whatever comes to the state. Director Kempton had organized a number of stakeholder phone conferences and discussion sessions back in November, December, into January before the bill was actually signed. And as we were talking, the bill was changing through time, and we were following and tracking it. We were essentially trying to have a California consensus on how this money will be spent and know that and have everybody on board and pull in the same direction once the money came. Next slide. For California, I'm supposed to advance. Multitasking, that's going to be hard. For us in California, as you know, the total package of ARRA money in transportation was about $27 billion. And out of that, we expect, for the highway side, we expect we're going to get about $2.5 billion coming to California, and out of the transit side on the formula program, let me start by saying there are two aspects to it. There's a formula program for transportation, and there's a discretionary program for transportation. On the formula side, on the local streets and highway side, we expect $2.5 billion, and on the transit side, we're expecting about $1 billion. Now, that seemed like a lot of money initially when this was being talked about. Once we got our hands on the actual apportionment, it doesn't look like a whole lot of money now as we were trying to look at all of the universe of projects we were going to be dealing with. And also, given the fact that there was an urgency on how we spend the money, having 50% of a chunk of that money go within 120 days, it begins to limit the universe of what you had to work with. On the discretionary side, this is nationwide. There is about $14 billion available nationwide to these various programs. On the highway side, there's a discretionary pot for $1.5 billion, and I'll talk a little bit about that shortly. There's an $8 billion program for high-speed rail and inner-city rail. Amtrak gets another $1.3 billion, which we expect some of that money will also be spent in California, given that we have some of the most productive Amtrak routes in the country. There's a set aside for new starts, about $750 million, and aviation has another $1.3 billion. We don't have direct control over most of the sources of funds, and typically we assume in California that at least 10% of whatever pot is up nationally is available to us. I would have to say in this case, and at the risk of being quoted anywhere, we expect a substantial chunk of what's available in this discretionary package, particularly on the high-speed rail and intercity rail side. We're not going to play for 10%. It has to be more than 10% given our needs in California. Going back to the formula highway money, out of the $2.5 billion that we expect, 3% is set aside for transportation enhancement activities. That's about $77 million. And then $771 million is sub-allocated directly to the regions under the Surface Transportation Program sub-allocation formula, and the state gets directly $1.8 billion. Now, AB 3X320, which was signed by the governor a few weeks ago, has actually dealt with the 1.8 and restructured how that's distributed. And the way it's formed, the way it's flowed out now is 62.5% of all of the $2.5 billion is actually going directly to regions, and 32.5% is coming directly to the state. On the transit formula side, the first two bullets, the urban transit and the fixed guideway programs, are subvented directly to transit agencies. And that really works well for us because it cuts out one more process to get the money directly to the operators, and we think it's the best approach. And so, essentially, out of the $1.07 billion that is available to California under the formula program for transit, most of it, except for $34 million, goes directly to transit operators in the regions. And of that amount, we already to date have 91.5 million already certified and submitted to FTA. They have till September to spend half of it, to obligate half of it, and 91 million is already already obligated and already certified and on the way to obligation at FTA. We are currently in the department working on applications that have come in for the 34 million that comes directly to us. And the 34 million under the 1511 program is really for rural transit. And rural transit is really a misnomer because it assumes it goes to essentially rural counties. Just about every county or every region in the state has a rural transit component to it. So that 34 million actually cuts across the entire state. And it also funds our intercity bus program, grant program. On the high-speed rail side, the rules are being written as we speak, and the president came out with some policy positions on his intent to make sure there is a high-speed rail system in the country, and we truly hold that very dearly and expect that we will be part of that implementation in California. We expect guidelines to come out in June. In the meantime, we are working with all of the stakeholders on the rail side across the state to identify what are logical projects that will really set us up to use the money that's coming through this program as efficiently as possible, knowing that we have projects in place that could use the money very wisely. The $1.5 billion discretionary grant program is one that's really exciting, and we're beginning to, again, develop a consensus process, much like we had in place going into the development of the AIRA Act itself. Director Kempton is already beginning to have discussions across the state on having a California consensus package. The way this program works is you have a minimum grant of $20 million and a maximum per state grant of $300 million. So as a state, California expects to get $300 million. The question is, what do you spend the $300 million on? And we want to be sure that it addresses some key elements, and so we're developing some guiding principles on how that money would be best spent. We want, obviously, have the money come, given the nature of AIRA funds, go to projects that will have a stimulus effect on the economy, projects that can be done quickly, projects that have very explicit impact on goods movement, I think, is one of the principles that we are also organizing around, and long-term benefits, projects that have significant long-term and multi- or interregional benefits. So we're looking at some really big bang-type projects, hopefully, to come out of this discussion on the California consensus. The guidelines are not set yet for this program. We don't expect to see guidelines until later next month, and that will begin to move things very quickly. In the meantime, we're having discussions on what types of projects would we want to put together as a state to use up that $300 million that might be available to us. As Dr. Hearn said earlier on, this money's come with a lot of obligations. Accounting and transparency it's not just in words. We've started feeling the effect of it. We had an all-day session with the GAO. I have worked at Caltrans for 20 years, never had a chance to meet folks from the GAO, met them a couple of weeks ago. And needless to say, it went well, because I think as a state we had been prepared through the Prop 1B process with the transparency and accountability that the governor had in place. We were in good standing already, and we were prepared to deal with all of the questions that are coming from the GAO. The issue with the GAO is it doesn't stop with that one meeting. Just about every other day, there are questions that keep coming, and they keep teasing out, what exactly are you doing? How are you spending the money? How are you reporting? And there are other reporting aspects to this process as well that really is different than we've ever had before with federal funding. We feel like we're up to the task. I think one of the things to keep in mind as we go forward is that the public is also very interested in what happens with every single dollar that we get. And so the accountability is not just an academic process with between agencies. I think it's one of public public benefit as well. And so you would notice that we have a lot of our information on the website that was mentioned earlier on, so anybody can look it up and see which projects have come in, which ones are certified, which ones are obligated, and where are they? Well, what's the status of those projects as we go through the delivery of those projects? And in fact, how many jobs are created by those projects will be reported as well. The governor was required under the act to certify to maintenance of effort. What that means is that as a state, we would not supplant our existing investment in transportation with ERA funds. You will continue to use whatever you had planned to use for transportation already, and ERA funds will be in addition to what you already have. So the governor had to certify to that maintenance of effort certification. The use it or lose it formula, I think, is one that's very critical. Use it or lose it component is very critical. We are under the gun to spend about obligate $900 million on the highway side by June, middle of June. I think we're on track to do that. We've already certified $625 million, and I've been out of state for a couple of days, so I think we've certified more than that under the current process, and expect that we would be able to hit the 120-day requirement, so we would not lose funds. In fact, we are setting up to take funds away from other states that may lose funds and have those monies redistributed to California. That really is the intent of what we're trying to do. Like I said, our process is really well suited for all of the requirements of ERA. Prop 1B had heightened the notion of transparency and accountability to the point that we actually were prepared for all of the rules that ERA brought with it. We're using all of our existing processes. We haven't had to create any new process or develop any new units to handle this. We're trying to take everything and run them through our existing processes so that we minimize the administrative overcharge that will come with the program. Quickly on one of the things that I know you probably are interested in is before ERA came, we had Prop 1B, and in the good old days, and I like to say the good old days because that was just about a year and a half ago, when we had a lot of money coming at us and were excited about the potential and the prospect of having to spend $19 billion on transportation, which is unprecedented everywhere you go across the country. That's a budget of some small countries that we had coming to us through Prop 1B. And then in December, obviously, we were hit with a slowdown in the process because of our bond, our budget situation and our capacity to go out to bond. The ERA process has allowed us to, in fact, take some of those monies and loan it to the bond program through ABX 320. There are four critical projects that we were able to advance through ABX 320 with ERA funds, and $310 million out of the state share of the 32.5% state share, $310 million is being loaned to the bond program to fund four shovel-ready bond projects, and those projects include the Caldecott Tunnel project, and you'll begin to see each one of those four projects go to construction this year before the end of the summer. Again, I don't want to spend too much time on goods movement, given our time, and hopefully you have questions that will cover some of this, but our goods movement process is one like I mentioned earlier on, that has started a long time ago, and we've actually honed our focus through the GMAP and the processes that led to the bond program, the TCIF program. We've honed our focus on goods movement and what the specific important corridors are so that we have investment in those corridors. We're continuing to advance those investments with a California consensus position on goods movement as an element of how we spend our IRA funds as one, but also as an element of the reauthorization of the federal transportation bill. The bullets in there are just some of the key policy positions that we've established for goods movement that I think is consistent in all of our discussions over the last couple of years. Now, climate change is it's like a perfect storm. We have the budget situation, we have climate change, there's ERA funds, and we have to do all of those things at once. We have to be able to chew gum and walk, as somebody said. And we are actually paying very close attention to climate change. I think the next panel is probably going to address that even more so. I noticed that you have Mr. Goldstein here in the afternoon to talk about that, and it's incredible what challenge they have to deal with under AB 32 to lead the process with SB 375. And the department is part of that process, understanding that there is a major implication for transportation as you look at climate change. One of the first things we've done that we did this year was actually do a quick vulnerability assessment of the impacts of climate change on transportation. And it's, again, the key operative word there is a quick assessment. It's a living document. We expect to upgrade that document as the science informs us of what the potentials truly are and as we begin to identify the specific impacts that we expect, we would continue to upgrade our vulnerability assessment. So our approaches to climate change is first understanding the issues, which is what we're doing, and there's a lot of studies going on, very specific scientific studies going on that the state is sponsoring, that we're participating in trying to understand what that means, and also what mitigation strategies can we begin to employ at this point as we go forward, and how do we adapt for the future. So those are the three approaches that we're taking with respect to climate change. I'm going to skip this slide. Again, I apologize. I don't want to. The AB 375 is one that I think is probably more of a direct impact on us because it affects directly how transportation behaves with respect to greenhouse gases. There's an assessment that at least 40% of greenhouse gas emissions are tied to transportation. So there's an obligation that's heavy on our side to try and do something about that. And so we're working directly with our friends at ARB and across the state, also with the regional agencies to begin to address. And one of the processes in place is under 375 is the development of targets, which ARB is leading the effort on. And that will condition, again, how we address transportation, both from the greenhouse gas emissions process, the fuels process, how we combine all of these elements to reduce greenhouse gases. I think it's work in progress and one that's been taken very seriously. The Growth Council is another element, and again, this seemed like a lot of disparate activities that are going on, which in fact, there's a lot of coordination, and the Growth Council is the point of coordination at the state, at the highest level of the state, to ensure that all of the things that we're doing have a direct benefit in pointing in the direction of sustainability, which is the focus of your conference. The intent of the Growth Council is to make sure that all elements of state government come together to make sure that we're pulling in the same direction to ensure that whatever things are put in place through any of our agencies at the state level is intended to lead towards sustainability. And there is some discussion on how we might be able to fund some activities that would help the regions on making sure that happens. I have some slides here on what we're doing at the department. I'm going to skip those with respect to the policy discussions that I've talked about. There's a need to do a California transportation plan. This becomes the organizing document for all of these things that we're talking about and how it does play with respect to the policies that guide both in terms of economic activity equity and the environment, all of that come into play under the California Transportation Plan. In closing, I'm just going to leave this one up until the next speaker. We do, in fact, have a website specific to Caltrans on the recovery program. And frankly, I think it would we're best served by your questions to really understand what else you all want to know about, because we have a lot of information to share on what we're doing with respect to the stimulus package, what we're doing with respect to climate change, and specifically what we're doing with respect to goods movement. So with that, I want to again thank you for asking us to be here and look forward to the discussion to follow.
Thank you, Comey. I'd like to encourage you to write down your questions, and I'm waiting for staff, where are you, to come and pick up questions. I'll now bring up Randy Rentschler, who's Legislative and Public Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Transportation Commission.
Good morning. It's nice to be here. I have to have your media guy. Oh, he's working on it right now. Great. So my name is Randy Rentschler. I've had the great privilege not just to be here this morning, but to work for the Metropolitan Transportation Commission and now the Bay Area Toll Authority for almost 20 years. For those of you who don't know, the Metropolitan Transportation Commission is a regional body that allocates federal, state, and local funding throughout the Bay Area. And the Bay Area Toll Authority is the agency that collects your tolls, so at least you should not like them. It also runs Fast Track and other items, and is certainly responsible for the design of the new Bay Bridge that's going up. I wanted to mention Ron Blattman's movie that was just shown earlier. I think, because I have seen about an hour or so of it, you probably would have enjoyed watching more of that than listening to me. But he's also a great salesman, too. He came to our offices and pried about $500,000 out of us. And we are one of the prime sponsors of this really very, very good piece about the Bay and the Bay Area Toll Authority, which has seven toll bridges on the Bay, is really an important way not just to see the Bay, but it's an important way for us to make a contribution to the future. So, Ron, great job on this flick, and we look forward to seeing it on television. You know, I'm hopeful that my brief comments today will at least make your morning worthwhile. If you're a contractor looking to get some work and you want to know where the money is, hopefully I can help you. If you're a local agency looking to get some money to then give it to the contractors, hopefully I can help you as well. You know, the stimulus program has really started a bit of a nostalgia program here in the Bay Area for the 1930s in the Work Projects Administration, and to a certain extent, rightly so. You know, if you were to get a room at the top of this hotel, you could actually be really inspired by the things that our forefathers did. They built the Caldecott Tunnel at this time. The Alameda County Courthouse was built as well. The Oakland Post Office down on 12th Street, a short walk from here, was done. Skyline Drive up in the hills was done. The bridges that connect Oakland to Alameda, both the Park Street Bridge and the High Street Bridge, were built. The Port of Oakland as well. And if you really want to be inspired, of course, you can look at the Bay Bridge and the Golden Gate Bridge, which not only are beautiful architectural statements and really world-class attractions of themselves, but they also changed the Bay Area for the entire future after they were built. They were fundamentally game changers, is what they were. You know, none of these projects were shovel-ready when the stock market crashed in 1929. None of them were. None of them had cleared an environmental document. I think you know where I'm going. And the real value of these projects wasn't that they employed some people right away. It's that they created an environment for millions of people could be employed for generations. So the real issue is, what are we going to do now with the money that we're getting for the future? and what kind of game-changing are we going to do for our kids? So at the risk of boring you with numbers on slides, but hopefully to give you a path so those of you can get a piece of this money if that's what you're so inclined, let me just very briefly show you where these funds are going in the Bay Area. If you look at the slide on the top, transit, which means in our parlance, public transit, got about $340 million. The great majority of this money, about 80% of it, is going to either maintain the system we have on the capital side or to turn this money into operating money and to keep the existing services on the street we have right now. A small portion was identified for a project to connect BART to the Oakland airport. You can see there it's for $70 million. And if BART is unable to get that project completed, those funds will go back to the transit rehabilitation program. On the roadway side, the federal bill was written in such a way that a percentage of the money came directly to agencies like mine for decision. That decision has already been made. It was made last month, so we are moving very rapidly on this. And about 80% of it is going for local road rehabilitation. Now, there's no doubt the roads need it. I think you drive it every day. If you're in business of doing road work and you want to know, our websites at mtc.ca.gov have exactly every road that's going to be getting these funds. So if you're living on Fernside in Alameda, you're going to know that that road's going to be fixed with these monies. If you happen to live in Palo Alto or Menlo Park or wherever else you live, you can go find out which road is going to get these monies. With some of the extra money we had available, the commission made some choices on some safety projects and what we call smart highways, which is a euphemism for ramp metering. For those of you who don't like ramp metering, the alternative, of course, is worse, which is instead of waiting on the ramp, you wait on the freeway. And we're going to be doing projects like this to try to get the best result that we can from our freeway system. The state of California also got a good bit of money from the stimulus program. And of course, the state of California will always make things more complicated than need be and pass a bill to do so. That bill is called AB 23X. 3X, of course, is in reference to the third special session that they are in. So in round numbers, what this bill does is this. Every single nickel from the stimulus program will be used by Caltrans for a rehabilitation project. Every nickel. We call that the SHOP program. The SHOP program basically means that we'll keep the system in a good rate of repair. Every nickel will be used to do that. In the meantime, Caltrans is very interested in maintaining a bond program that the voters voted on in November of 2006. That's Proposition 1B. So what the state will do is use federal money, backfill a bunch of projects that are either on the street ready to be built or have bids right around the corner, shovel ready. So they don't have to issue bonds and have an expense. But later, we'll put Humpty Dumpty back together again, and all the money will go to the SHOP. As you can see, there are some projects listed here that are going to be getting these monies right away. So if you're interested in those projects, there they are. Now, my agency, the Bay Area Toll Authority, loaned the state of California about $200 million a couple of months ago in really a unique, one-of-a-kind type of transaction. The state was locked out of the credit markets because they didn't have a budget, and they needed some money to keep some Bay Area highway projects moving. So if you live on Highway 101 in the North Bay, mostly Sonoma, if you live on Interstate 80 or you take the Cordelia Junction, if you drive on 580 or drive on 680, all those projects had really guys out there working on them that were going to have to go home. And so my agency fronted to the state $200 million to keep those Prop 1B projects moving. The state subsequently was able to get a deal together for the budget that you all get a chance to vote on in May. The state was able to get into the markets and issue more bonds than they had expected to keep a bunch of these bond projects going. So I know this is a long description to a point that's going to be short, which is my agency was the beneficiary of this complicated state arrangement, AB 23X. And we actually got twice as much money, road money as we would have out of the federal government to make a decision on. So for those of you still looking for money, for those of you who work for public agencies wondering when the other shoe's going to drop, well, this is that shoe. So your morning will be hopefully well worth. My agency is going to use a good bit of this money to backfill the state bonds. The Caldecott is an example of that. There are others. But the state's going to repay us. And we're going to be able to use those monies for a new investment program that the commission has to make a decision on into the future. Now, there's complicated arrangements to repay us, of course. And the money we get from the state at this point won't be as good as the money we're getting from the feds. And this all has not fully played out yet. But for those of you who pay attention to what my agency does, I would urge you to continue to pay attention, because this stimulus program is not over yet. It's mostly over, but it's not over yet. Lastly, there's a game to be played in Washington, D.C. My agency plays there, as many of yours do as well. One of the games to be played is this $1.5 billion discretionary program that has a horrible name, really. It does. I don't know where they invent these things. So we just call it the Ray LaHood program, because he's the Secretary of Transportation. So it's $1.5 billion, which sounds like a lot. It's actually $5 per person in the United States. So I'm not so sure it is a lot. When the state of California did Prop 1B, the Bay Area got $1.5 billion itself just for that one program. So while it will be interesting to go spend a lot of money lobbying for the money in Washington, I'm not so sure there's really going to be a whole lot there. You know, winding it around to a game changer, what are we really going to do for future generations? What are we going to do in 2009 and 10 to really meet the challenges of the future is really the question that I think remains on the table. It's no doubt that the Bay Bridge and the Golden Gate Bridge and the Caldecott Tunnel and Skyline Drive and all the bridges that were built during the 1930s really ushered in an era that really changed America. The highway system was probably the most important public investment the world has ever seen. And the Bay Bridge and the Golden Gate Bridge changed everyone's lives, like it or not, congestion, suburbanization, all those things. And with fears of peak oil and fears of climate change and fears of dependency on places of the world we don't really like, and corporations many of us don't like for all of our liquid fuels, the real question is, what's America going to do? And is this stimulus package going to do anything about that? And I think on the transportation side, it's clear that the administration has chosen high-speed rail. And there's an $8 billion number to do something for high-speed rail in this state. And my agency, working with many others, is trying to broker a deal here in the Bay Area so we can go back to Washington, D.C. and say, this is the money that we want so that we can have a project and all of our children who are going to be repaying this money back can actually get something for it. So I think that that is going to be the focus that my agency and others are going to have for the future. And as you can see on previous slides, we've already focused most of it on rehabilitation for the apt-named me generation that we live in right now. So thank you for your time, and I appreciate your thoughts.
Moving right along. Number one, very basic, question about PowerPoint availability, and will the PowerPoints be posted on the Bay Planning Coalition website? Yes, given permission from the groups here today, of course, we will be, and I anticipate the answer will be yes. These will be posted on our website. And as far as availability, if you need hard copies, then send an email to Bay Planning, but they will be on our website. The questions in about three groups, I've sort of organized these into three groups. You can imagine here today, we are in the home of the bulkhead port for the region, the Port of Oakland, the fourth busiest container port in the United States. Maybe it was slipping a little bit, but I'm still going to say fourth because that's where we want to keep it and keep it strong. So there's a lot of interest in the IRA money how the ARRA money is going for projects that were slated for Prop B, Prop 1B money, particularly for rail improvements. And the question, I think, goes to Comey and to Randy as to how you see, you talked about the loan back, $300 million from ARRA back to Prop 1B. Is there any hope for projects for goods movement improvement, as we say, that we're slated for ensuring our success of Oakland here as well as the related maritime industry? Do you want to say how those are coming into play?
Well, I would say for those interested in the port, the Prop 1B program was essentially a goods movement program. It took care of Interstate 580. It took care of Interstate 80. It has other goods movement attributes to it. So by the state bailing out itself on the bonds, those interested in goods movement are going to be taken care of as well. Whether or not goods movement does better on some of these federal discretionary programs is an open question. So I guess I would answer it that way.
Okay. I think the $1.5 billion discretionary program also offers an opportunity for goods movement strategy that might come forward in the discussion that we're having right now. The $310 million that was taken from ARRA to fund shovel-ready bond projects, those four projects are essentially, they don't have, they're not explicitly goods movement projects, but they have essential goods movement elements. So they're big projects that connect regions to regions and have implications across the state. Those monies, are, after we're done with that and the money's paid back to the state highway account, we will use that $310 million to do projects, again, on corridors of significance to goods movement. So I think where we are right now is it's hard to not have to have a project that doesn't have a goods movement component to it if you start to look at the regionally significant projects that we're dealing with.
How about channel deepening, Jim, for the 4.6, as opposed to maintenance? This will go to deepening, navigation channel deepening.
Well, if I talk about any specific project, Major Edwards from the San Francisco District has to shoot me. So it is part of the component to broaden the channels as much as we can to broaden them to their required level, not just the maintenance level we've been using before. If I'm not sure though if that's still in there or not, so I can't tell you if that's actually going to happen. But one of our goals was to get your channels to where they should be, and we all know that throughout the states, most federal channels are dredged to about 37% of capacity, and so that's just doesn't do anything for our transportation challenges. So I would like to think it is. I don't know what the final product is going to be. I know that is one of our intents, is to get our navigation channels to where they should be.
Great. Thank you, Jim. A lot of interest in water transit in this room and throughout the Bay Area and expanding our water transit ferry program. Randy, you may have spoken to this, but the questions are related to what are the guidelines for the use, or maybe Comey too, for ferry boat discretionary funds. Is there a certain amount of money for that coming to California?
There will be. I mean, the ferries have the great benefit of having a set-aside program for them in this bill. How we're going to do there is an uncertainty. It's a bit of a sweepstakes there. You know, the real challenge for ferries and the real challenge for all transit, public transit, is to keep it going every single day, is to wake up every morning and have the money to fuel the boat and pay the guy to drive it. But there is going to be some money available on the side that is less critical, which is the capital side. For those of you in the ferry program who need to know this information, come see me afterwards. Those very significant details we have posted on our websites and are available for you, and I'll kind of spare the rest of the audience the balance of that.
Okay, thank you. The environmental review process is something that you're going to be hearing more about that And the influence of the environmental challenges and opportunities in panel number two directly after the break. But the questions are pertaining to what kind of coordination and increased workload support are you, Jim, at the Army Corps, or even at Caltrans, or even, you know, at MTC, are focused on keeping the coordination going with the environmental process and the NOAA fishery and the fish and game, Fish and Wildlife Service, they're all here today. They have a great interest in this, so do we. And so the question is, what ideas or what thought have you given to coordinating environmental processes? And
okay, a few points on that. We did unexpectedly receive in the stimulus bill a fair amount of money, increased money for the regulatory program, so we could support the projects that are being activated in the stimulus program. So we, in California especially, we will be getting a fair chunk of money assigned to our districts to beef up our regulatory support. I know our regulatory team has been working a lot closer recently with our compadres and the other agencies of NOAA and EPA and on our issues out there to try to build a better relationship between each other so we can streamline our processes, looking at some general permits in some cases if that's appropriate. And again, trying to better get to closure many of our EIR, EIS, EIR processes. And you know that some of them can take quite a long time. California is a very strict state on that. If you were down in Texas right now, you'd probably just walk in and sign up for the project. You know, but we have a very environmentally aware community out here. But we are working with them. We did receive extra funds for that, and we will be working to get that out to our activities so we can recruit for the press for the, to do better with that.
Great. Kome, well, do you want to say?
From our perspective, virtually all of the projects that we are funding with ARRA monies have gone through the environmental review process, and essentially, to be shovel-ready, you have to have done that. There are some that may still require permitting that we're working on. What we found is, at least what we understand is, ARRA does not change any of the rules with regards to environmental stewardship, so we're maintaining all of our requirements. We've also found that the various resource agencies, both state and federal, have been very cooperative in trying to make sure that we don't miss our targets, and so there's a lot of cooperative work going on, and there's no compromise on the environment, I think is the story here.
Okay. Randy, do you have any comments? Okay. Yes. California state budget crisis. We're still on tenterhooks, I think. And while we talk about this, Kome, you said we're walking and chewing gum at the same time. I think maybe could you just talk a little bit about the overall issue with the California budget crisis and how the relationship and the intersection with that and our ARRA program, and are we getting through this? Or we still have to be worried, I think.
Okay. who has a
that
joke?
Was a hard one. That was a hard one.
Who has a joke
one
out there for me? I'm probably most unqualified to speak about the California budget, but what I can offer is I think we are still in a very tenuous situation. The budget is still imbalanced, as we all know. On the transportation side, which is where I comfortably reside, I feel a little more comfortable about what is to come. What the scare we had in December when the pool money investment account board pulled funding from our bond projects, I think we're coming around to solving that slowly. It's not done yet. We had a very very positive response from the bond market in April earlier this month that sort of gives us some courage to go forward and continue to expect that our projects will be funded. Now the rest of the budget I think is really still in of very much concern and I think it's going to continue to drag the rest of all of us slowly through as we solve those problems of the budget. With respect, again, I think Randy mentioned earlier on that
it was very heartwarming to see that there are regions that would take leadership and invest in California, which the MTC region did. That helped to continue to sustain some projects. Once we got bonds sold in April, there was more a relief that we will continue to keep our bond projects going, particularly the projects that are not shovel ready. See, it's one thing to be shovel ready and get ERA funds. We have a stream of projects. About, I would imagine, 75% of our projects are still behind, coming slowly, and hopefully we'll get bond monies to go forward. And all of those folks that are involved in getting those projects done, I think, are nervous about whether that's going to happen or not. I think the story today is that we're a little more comfortable where we are today. There's another bond sale expected in May, and that would really be the key indicator of how comfortable we'll get from here out. So I haven't answered the question out of just sheer fear and survival, but I hope that you understand on the transmission side where we're coming from with regards to the comfort level we're getting from the bond market as of now.
Okay. Yeah, Randy.
Well, I'm going to do Comey a favor here because I'm under no such restrictions or fear. You know, all the discussions we've had is how we're spending our children's money. Prop 1B fundamentally is that. The stimulus money fundamentally is that. And this state hasn't raised the gas tax since Governor Duke Majan was governor in 1989. The voters got a chance to vote on that in 1990. So if you all never had a pay raise from 1990, you'd probably be living a little threadbare right now, and your house may feel congested, and your floors may need to be redone, and your roof is probably leaking as well. And I think that's the metaphor for the infrastructure that we live in this state. And if we are going to get serious, and we're not yet serious, the only thing we're really serious about is borrowing from the future, is that we have to get serious about the gas tax. It doesn't make sense from my agency's point of view that gas prices go up to $5 a gallon and then they go back down again and the public got really nothing for it. And so if we are going to get serious in this state, we got to get serious about this, and we need to think about it in those terms. And I just could not help myself but to save Comey that statement.
And I agree with Randy.
You know, Comey talked about the good old days, which was, November 2006. Six, yeah. Okay, and I remember those because Bay Planning worked very hard with a number of organizations statewide to get that those bond issues, the proposition on the ballot. What I want to bring up now, too, is that people haven't forgotten about the good old days, and some of the issues here, like the gas tax, are old things that need to be reassessed and brought up again. What is going on right now? There's another piece that of work that the state of California is doing. This is the Business Transportation and Housing Agency has a, along with the ARRA implementation, has a economic recovery work plan process going on. They've divided up the state into the Caltrans regions. So we are four, Caltrans four, and the Bay Area Council Economic Institute has been asked, and they're a good organization to do this, to coordinate any projects that are either on the ARRA list already, even been certified, and then there is an obligation list, but there are others out there. Who else has a project that somehow isn't on a list yet? Well, there's an opportunity now to get your proposal in to the website for this is bayareaeconomy.org. I don't have a slide for that, at least at the moment, but and you can talk to me about some more information, but there is a deadline on Friday. You could go online to get a project proposal into the bayareaeconomy.org website, and those are being put into a list that will go up to Secretary of Business, Transportation, Housing, Dale Bonner, by beginning of June. So there's still stuff to be done right now, and I say, y'all, get on with it, and you can look to Bay Planning for support, and these gentlemen here have provided some really good information. We're going to break now. You can have a break, but we're going to start immediately at 11 for our panel number 2, and I want to thank you all for your excellent presentation. Thank you very much. It was great. Yeah. We had a question about...
What was your question?
My question is for the widening of the cattle tree in San Francisco's intermodal possibilities, right, for future growth here in San Francisco, not all come together.
And that should, well, it's... Well, the Calicut Tunnel, that is being